Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, May 2nd, 2016. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm being worked up by a devil's advocate piece.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Gonna run tomorrow morning.
Awesome. All right. Well, because we have our awesome listeners, they now have a little bit of insider information. They know there's a cool devil's advocate piece coming tomorrow morning. Cool. John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm very good. Good morning.
Good morning. And it's nice to have you guys back. I spent all last week talking with conference event organizers, and it was a lot of fun and really cool. I just had so much fun with that. But I was missing you guys, so it's time to have you back.
Shucks.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor this week, and it's Yoink from Eternal Storms, and I've been playing with it, and I'm actually really liking it. But I'll talk about that in just a little bit. Before we do that, though, John, you have been talking about what you think could come from Apple between now and a few years from now when the Apple Car comes out, assuming it actually does come out. And my understanding is you're looking at this laundry list of products because you're thinking that Apple has something else big that's coming.
Yeah. What got me started, of course, was the earnings report last week when many people would have you believe that the end has come for Apple. And in the absence of being able to understand their pipeline and Apple's secrecy, it seems like there's a giant brick wall there with Apple having shown a decline. And I thought, well, you know, it would be a good time to talk about what could be in the pipeline, because Tim Cook kind of briefly alluded to that during the earnings report. And it got me thinking, you know, the Apple Car is at least 3 years away, 2019. I think it'll slip to 2020. But I started thinking, well, what, there's lots of exciting things for Apple to do in the intermediate time. And we know that Apple's always got cool stuff in the pipeline, you know, like the iPhone 7, which we know about. But what are some of the things that are less on our radar? And so I talked to Dave Hamilton and you guys one morning, and we kind of put a list together, and I distilled that down to what I thought were the best bets for cool stuff that Apple might do that's kind of like in sync with, you know, their tradition of being disruptive and building products that fit in with the family of products in their current infrastructure, and it moves the state of the art forward. So I made a list. And if you haven't seen the article, it's number one, iCloud Time Machine. Two, Siri is not just a lookup agent, but a true artificial intelligence agent. Three, the next generation Apple TV with 4K and HDR, high dynamic range, and maybe even a DVR for cord cutters. The Apple Watch, of course, I think will become more and more a super enhanced wearable in time. Right now, the first version of it is rather limited in what it can do biometrically, but I foresee a time when the Apple Watch will be doing a lot more in terms of blood chemistry monitoring and maybe Dick Tracy-like FaceTime calls. So the Apple Watch is just going to, and maybe just audio calls on LTE for starters. So I think the Apple Watch has got a bright future, and it's just going to get better and better. And then finally, I started, this is a long shot, started thinking about new kinds of iPhone displays. Because, you know, I've long talked about how the iPhone, which is this block of aluminum and glass which we hold in front of our face, isn't going to last forever. The concept of the iPhone, the being able to communicate, being able to get information on the internet and communicate, is key, but not necessarily holding a piece of glass in our face and staring at it, which is kind of limiting, because if it's big, it's bulky, and it's annoying. iPhone 6S Plus is too big for some people. But if it's small and handy, then it's kind of hard to read the fine print. So we've kind of got a technological problem there. So if we could have a small device that's handy, if it's in our shirt pocket or our pocket, we don't have to pull it out. But there's easier ways to access the information. You know, say a holographic projection from our watch, which is already an iPhone second screen, or maybe a graphene display that could be rollable or whatever. I started talking about different ways we could view our iPhone. And if Apple's been working on this for years, we might see something before 2020. If they haven't thought about it at all, or they don't want to do it, or they don't think it's a good way to go, then we won't see it at all. So those are some of the things I talked about.
All right, Brian, is there anything on the list that stands out for you, good, bad, or otherwise?
I think that John, generally speaking, has a lot of wish fulfillment projecting going on when it comes to Apple Watch.
Ye old lover of Apple Watch.
I don't love my Apple Watch. I like my Apple Watch. I don't love it. I'm actually, here's a fun fact. I'm not wearing it right now.
Oh, no. You didn't put it on for the show.
No, I'm wearing my Zenith.
Oh, I can feel the pain from here.
Yeah, yesterday I forgot to put it on when I first woke up, and wasn't going to hit my 12 hours. Mm-hmm. And said, I'm going to wear my Zenith. I love my Zenith.
It's because it doesn't nag you. It doesn't make you feel guilty.
It's not it at all. It's not it at all. I don't know. The Apple Watch is just not there yet.
I know.
Do you remember
1.0, and that was what I was talking about in the article. There's going to be a progression of technologies. The battery's going to get better. You're going to be able to make independent calls. It's going to sever the cord from the iPhone.
Apple Watch, it's not going to get better. Apple never makes the battery better. Never. Seldom.
No, actually, Brian, seldom. Just pulling I'm going he's to just get pedantic on you. Brian, what Apple never does is gives us longer battery life. They improve the battery so we can have more features, but with the same battery life.
Yeah, and Apple has on occasion actually given us better battery life with the MacBook Air. For instance, there was a big increase in the amount of battery life that device got. But that's the exception to the rule. Most everything else, Apple picks an arbitrary mark that Apple has determined is what most people need and that most people want, and sticks to that point. And then it's all about size.
Oh, I agree.
Well, no, you don't agree. You've been going on about how it's going to have this wonderful battery life. It's never going to have a wonderful battery life.
No, I think I said better battery so that you could do all these cool features. We can go back and listen to the transcript, but I didn't say battery life. I think I said better battery.
I have no doubt that at this point in the show, people are already writing in.
Yeah, you're right.
You have said in the past that it will have better battery life. You've said in the past that it will have bad. So that's
fair. Well, I've said fair. In the past it's a problem for Apple because in order to make the battery have a longer life, a lot of complex technologies have to happen. And making the watch thinner does not necessarily help that. And putting a LTE radio in there doesn't necessarily help that. So there's a technical conflict between the two. That's one article I wrote.
Do you remember when Steve Jobs came back after one of his medical leaves? And it was rumored that he basically put the kibosh on the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And delayed it by, I don't know, 6 months while he made folks redo some things.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would have done that with the Apple Watch. Like if he had come in at a similar point, you know, 3 months before the Apple Watch is going to be released, I think he would have put the kibosh on it. Now,
he had to charge it every night.
A lot of reasons. It's just it's not a device you have to have. It's not compelling.
Well, I can't live without it anymore. I can't imagine life without an Apple Watch now.
Make yourself go a week without it, and you can't.
I digress.
You know, okay, here's where I am with my Apple Watch. I really, really enjoy it. I'm really glad I have it. I wear it every day, although I don't put it on until I'm actually going out. So it's sitting in its charger right now because I haven't needed to leave yet today. And I keep thinking how awesome it would be if Fitbit would offer HealthKit integration, because I would get a new Fitbit to replace my one that broke and wear it every day and let it handle all the regular fitness tracking things that it's so good at and use my Apple Watch for everything else. I would go back to wearing two devices like that and I would be okay with that.
I like my Apple Watch, but I don't love it.
What'd you think about the rest of my list, Brian? What would you think of iCloud Time Machine and moving towards a genuine AI agent in our lives to manage our OS?
Well, Apple is certainly working on making AI better, certainly working on making Siri better. But I think we're going to see incremental improvements on that ad infinitum. And this is Apple's business model, and it has been since Steve Jobs came back. They release new products, and then they incrementally improve them. Siri is just one of those products. My big fear is that Apple is so hampered with its philosophical decision to not collect user data and keep it on servers. This is really going to hamstring the company when it comes to things like AI.
Yeah. We talked about that the other day. That's a really good point. I mentioned that in the article too.
It's an interesting, the piece that I've been wanting to write and haven't written is that Apple needs to think differently about data collection. I don't know. I think we'll see a search engine in the next 5 years. What was your timeline?
Before the car.
Before the car, yeah. I bet we see a search engine before the car. Bet we're going to definitely see big improvements in Siri. We're going to see a bunch of incremental stuff. I mean, all the stuff that Apple already has, we're going to see incremental improvements.
You know, the reason I brought that up is number two in my article is because Siri is a really, really good AI agent to carry on a conversation with you, perhaps pass the Turing test and know a lot about your needs, is a gateway to the user interface to your autonomous car.
Well,
you have to be able to carry on a sensible conversation with the car. Like, I know it's a no parking zone. Drop me off here. Go right around on the street for a while and come back and get me in 15 minutes. That's a real challenge. But people would expect to be able to carry on that conversation. I think just as you talk about a search engine as a gateway to the future, I talk about the AI agent as a gateway to the autonomous car.
So basically what you want in a car is Knight Rider.
I want the car to be responsive in a human sense rather than just, the car being saying, sorry, I can't help you there. Would you like me to look that up on the internet before you get a ticket?
Yeah, that sounds like Knight Rider. and kids, if you don't know what Knight Rider is, that's what Google and Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime are for.
Would I betray my evilness if I confess that I'd like to see the other version of the red lights that go back and forth and have the car go something like by your command instead of the Knight Rider thing?
It's inevitable, Brian. Yeah. Hey, I'd love to keep talking about this, but the other topic we have today, I really want to make sure that we hit. So I'm going to move us on. But before we do that, I want to talk about our sponsor, and that's Yoink from Eternal Storms. And Yoink is actually a really cool little app. So it's an app that acts like a Finder add-on. So when you need to move stuff around from folder to folder, or you have stuff that you copy from one document and put in another, and you want to do a lot of this stuff, but it's kind of inconvenient because you have to switch from folders and windows and it just becomes kind of this mess. Well, Yoink fixes that, because what it does is it acts like this little drawer that can pop out from the side of your screen. And so pretty much anything you can select can go in there, so that then you can easily move it where it needs to go, either individually or like you can gang up a bunch of stuff and have stuff grouped into this folder. Or it's not a folder. It's like this magical on-screen container thing. And when I started playing with it, at first I was like, I've got a giant screen. I have a 34-inch display. So I can have a lot of windows open. It's easy for me to drag from window to window. No big deal. But then when I started messing with it and I realized, oh, wait, I have stuff that I'm actually stopping my workflow so that I can move these files around, but I don't want to forget to move the files. So now I just toss them into the little Yoink window side container thing on my screen, and they sit there until I'm ready to put them where they really need to go. It's really cool, and I'm surprised at just how useful this app has turned out to be for me. And I love that I can select something like an element in a Photoshop document and just put it in there. And so now I have this element that I'm going to use in another Photoshop document, and it's just sitting there, and I don't have to go looking for it somewhere else. It's pretty cool. They just did an update that I want to try out, but since I don't have a MacBook Pro with the Force Touch trackpad yet, I can't try it out. But if you do have a newer Mac that has the Force Touch trackpad, you can actually now invoke Yoink just with the firmness of, wow, that sentence got away from me. You can invoke Yoink based on how firmly you press on your trackpad, which is kind of cool too. So it's a really neat little app. It's $6.99, and it's available on the Mac App Store. You can check it out. They have videos and stuff, so you can see how this works. At the website, that's eternalstorms.at/yoink. And yeah, go check it out. It's a really cool little app. I'm enjoying having it. So thank you, Yoink, for being our sponsor this week. Okay, Brian, I want to talk to you. And it's because I consider you my financial and stock expert.
Oh my goodness, you are in trouble.
Well, this probably explains the size of my apartment.
Yeah.
Nonetheless,
here's my first piece of advice: find someone better.
Wait, hold on. Got to write this down real quick. Okay, got it. Anyhow, now that we've established your credibility, I was hoping you could help me wrap my head around this whole thing with Carl Icahn, who was like really crazy excited about buying Apple stock, and he bought gobs and gobs. And then last week he was like, oh, China, Apple, bad. And he dumped it all. And some people I'm seeing online are saying that was a mistake, he was wrong, it was a bad idea. And I'm seeing other people saying, yeah, that was the right thing. And then you're saying, yes, it makes sense why he did it. And you have your own take on why exactly was this the right thing for him to do? And is this a bad thing for Apple?
Well, I didn't say that it was the right thing for him to do. I said that he wasn't wrong.
Okay.
I mean, for instance, the right thing for me to do with my pitiful Apple holding, and I do have a very, very tiny stake in Apple, the right thing for me to do is to hold it and not really think about the day-to-day ups and downs, because I believe in Apple's long-term future. Carl Icahn is someone else. He is a different person. He has different goals. He has different ideas, and he has a lot more money than I do. So for him, there are two aspects of this. First of all, the technical merits of what he said. He basically called China a big overhang. Let's see if I can't get the quote here. You worry a little bit, I'm quoting, you worry a little bit, maybe more than a little, about China's attitude. He said that China could just, quote, come in and make it very difficult for Apple to sell there. You can pretty much do what you want there, referring to China. And he's right. Any given moment, China could make it very difficult or even impossible for Apple to do business in that country. And it's scary. You've got the political pawn aspect. Apple is such a huge part of the such an important company within the U.S. Long ago, China started using threats aimed at Apple to counter threats that the U.S. made at China, at corporations within China that are owned by the state government, or have, or where the state has a stake in those, mm-hmm. where the U.S. is concerned about security. U.S. is concerned about having the products made by these companies that are used in our infrastructure in case they have backdoors. China professes being worried about backdoors into iOS and OS X both that the U.S. has access to. By the way, this happens to be the very thing that the FBI is whining about not having, but that's neither here nor there. It's, I mean, that's all about politics. And I think an even bigger issue for Apple in China is that China worries about China is very much playing a protectionist game. China doesn't want U.S. tech companies dominating technology in China. They want Chinese companies to take on that role. This is both for an economic reason and for a control reason. China can exert the control that it wants on local companies, and it has a much harder time doing it with foreign companies. So all of these things mean that at any given moment, Apple could face these huge barriers in China. And the fact that there's probably, there are millions of people in China employed directly or indirectly into making Apple products, it doesn't matter. That's not the issue that China cares about.
Okay, so I think I've got my head wrapped around this now, which is good because we are pretty much out of time. So would I be correct in saying that when I'm seeing these articles that are very binary, Carl Icahn was right to dump his Apple stock, or Carl Icahn was wrong to dump his Apple stock, what these people are likely doing is projecting their own feelings about Apple stock and their own perspective on Apple stock onto his decision, and not basing their statements on what's the right choice for him versus them.
Yeah, that's kind of it in a nutshell. But I know you said we're running out of time, but there's a really important aspect of this.
Okay.
When he sold, which is actually earlier this year, right? He's announcing it now, but it actually happened earlier this year. So his shares have been gone for weeks. When he did that, he locked in $2 billion in profits. $2 billion in profits he locked in. That's a big part of why he wasn't wrong to make this decision. He can always buy back into Apple. He actually had very positive things to say about Apple, and he even said he would probably buy back in if the time was right. So, you know, this wasn't about him dumping Apple or thinking that Apple is doomed. This is about locking in a bunch of profits due specifically to a big overhang that could affect the company.
Okay. And that totally makes sense. And $2 billion in profit? If someone gave me the opportunity to bring in $2 billion in profit, I would be hard-pressed to say no.
Yeah, I think a lot of us would be hard pressed to say no. That's just an absurd conversation to have, really.
Yeah, we're out of time, so I'm gonna have to wrap us up. Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, and thanks for helping me sort out the whole Carl Icahn thing. John, thank you for being here.
You're very welcome.
And I always love your predictions and your insight. Eternal Storms, thank you. And Yoink, their app, thank you for being our sponsor today. Check out the app. It is actually really cool. eternalstorms.at/yoink. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.